Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Everybody, I want to thank Ken Quiet Hawk for his amazing intro. He, as always, with that voice of his, manages to set a vibrational feeling to the show that makes me feel always warm and fuzzy and welcome. He's a native storyteller. Please check him out on YouTube. He and his wife have had a career of preserving Native American stories and cosmology with their storytelling for decades and decades and decades. And it is absolutely a form of preserving history that everyone should experience. It's profoundly wonderful and far better than dusty textbooks. Tonight is one of my favorite nights because I have Mary Joyce on with me. And, well, actually, I'm on with her. And she is the editor of an amazing website called Skyships Over Cashiers. You can find that at skyshipsovercashiers.com. It's an amazing website. She is the editor-in-chief, and she investigates and reports on all sorts of amazing circumstances and situations all over the world. Her material is well documented, and always there are great pictures, too, which, of course, I love. And on top of that, in addition to being very busy editing the website, she has written four amazing books. And they are done in the same type and style as the website actually is. They're well-researched. They're a kind of book you can sit down and you can read in a day if you want to. And they are educational, and they're insightful, and they're wonderful. She's written Tangible Evidence of Jesus Left Behind for Us to Find, The Cherokee Little People Were Real, Underground Military Bases Hidden in North Carolina Mountains, and my favorite of all, Bigfoot Beyond the Footprints. If you're only going to read one, this is the one to read, and have a box of Kleenex because it is so sweet, so touching, so moving that I just love it. I have given it as a gift all over the place, and it is a fabulous book, and it explains Bigfoot in a way that no place else does, and I would highly recommend people read it. So if you're only going to read one, that's the one to read. So welcome to the show, Mary. I'm so glad you're with me tonight again.
Well, with that intro, I really think you ought to become an agent. Might not be such a bad profession because you were so complimentary, and I'm sure somebody's out there looking for an agent, so I think you ought to give it serious consideration.
Well, you know, you can only expound like that if you were totally in love with something. So I would be a bad agent if I didn't believe in something. So, you know, but I'd happily take your book on Bigfoot on the Road. And you know, I think it is one of the most touching books I've ever read, and it's so beautifully done. And it makes you feel differently, you know, with all of the TV shows out there, you know, about, you know, these monsters, and they aren't. And I think that it's important that people realize that, you know, I'm not saying everybody should walk up to them and hand them a bouquet of flowers, but respect them and their territory. And, you know, they are not the vicious things that people have portrayed them to be. So anyhow, it's my favorite book of all the books you've written so far.
Well, you're very kind. And your audience will be amazed that is not the topic we chose to talk about tonight.
No, sorry. I tend to wax poetic on it because I love the book so much. But, yes, tell us about what we're talking about tonight.
Well, you and I, I think it was last week that we spoke about this, and there has been so much coming out in the media about these pilot radar pictures of little UFOs, and everybody's all excited because the Pentagon is, you know, letting some of this information out, and they're allowing the pilots to let stuff out. And if I were to put a title on my slant on what's been going on with this recent disclosure information, I would put the title out as "The Government is Spoon-Feeding Us UFO Information." And, you know, I spent a lot of time interviewing other people for the website and reading other people's books. And this time I really would like to speak from a first-person position when it comes to this subject. Back in 1986, I moved to Cocoa Beach, and I could see the Space Center way out there in kind of a finger of land that stuck out into the ocean. And I could feel the rockets go off. I could feel the vibration under my place that I lived. So I was really in the thick of it. And I was there, like I said, I moved to the beach in, I think, around 86, and that was the year of the shuttle disaster, the Challenger. And
oh, wow.
At the time, I was working for Eastern Florida State College, which at the time was known as Brevard Community College, and it would be the closest institution of that kind to the Space Center. So I was really close to it. And I was going back to the college. I don't know where I'd been, but I'd been somewhere. And I'm driving north on Highway 1, and I've got the radio on because the shuttle Challenger was being launched. So I'm watching this go up as I'm driving. I've got the news on the radio, so I'm hearing it blow by blow as I'm watching it. And then all of a sudden I look at it and I go, that's not right. And so I pulled over, and other people did too, and just watched it. I mean, it didn't take you long to figure out it was going down. So that was really very momentous. Well, I got into this even thicker because one of the astronauts, his name was Clark McClellan. Now, he was, I can't remember his title, he was like a shuttle command engineer, so he could operate the shuttle from the ground, and he was at that you know, with all the monitors, and he watched at one point a very tall alien meet with one of our astronauts out in the open bay of the shuttle, and which is really quite phenomenal. Now, he made the mistake of letting some other people, he talked about it, not a lot, but he talked about it. Because of that, because he let out that he saw this, he lost his job, he lost his benefits. Anytime he wanted to get a job, the opportunity was destroyed. So from that point on, you know, his life was miserable, just, you know, miserable. And to make a double whammy out of it, his girlfriend was Judith Resnick, who was one of the people on that Challenger disaster that crashed. or burned up or whatever. So
yeah,
I was invited, actually through my sister, to a place, to someone's home in Orlando during this time period, right after all of this had happened. And it was for Clark to be able to tell his experience to a few people at this person's home. Looking back on it, I feel very honored that I was even there for it. And he was really nervous about it. He started to talk, and even though it was a house-sized group, and it wasn't a huge group, he was sweating bullets. And from what I can piece together, and I can't swear that this part, my assumption here, is true, but many of these people who get into trouble with the government will get more public about what's happened because they don't want to find themselves 6 feet under. And so
yeah,
that was certainly a motivation for him to want to talk to some other people about it. So here's this poor man who had just lost his girlfriend in the shuttle disaster, and he had witnessed a tall alien meeting with one of our astronauts in the open bay of the shuttle, and, you know, his life fell apart after all that. Well, I was trying to refresh my memory on some of this before this show tonight, and I just found out that he had died April of this year. Didn't know
Wow.
that. And if I wasn't checking on facts, you know, before I talked to you, I still wouldn't know. But when he died, he was in some kind of a nursing care type facility. He had lost his leg. I don't know why. But he died without much of anything. And he tried very, very hard to get the information out that he had to the public. He had a website. He was trying to get that out to people. And again, as I was doing this refresher course for myself, I found out that very late in his life, I think while he was in the nursing home, but I can't swear that's when it started, a professional writer worked with him and wrote a book, you know, in tandem with him. I've ordered it. I haven't gotten it yet. But hopefully his story will come out and a few more people will hear about it. So that's the kind of extent of, what I was exposed to just living on Cocoa Beach. And that's not the only thing. One of the engineers at NASA lived within walking distance down, you know, up the beach from where I was. And we became friends. And one day he showed up at my door with a carton of books. And it was 24 books by Alice Bailey. Now, you probably know who she is.
Oh, yeah.
I will explain it just briefly, and you can, you know, expand on it more. But she was into theosophy.
Yes.
And
she was
one of the first people to use the term New Age and the Age of Aquarius. And mm-hmm. Her books were esoteric. They were philosophical books. They dealt with spiritual realities in the solar system, destiny of nations, meditation, healing, psychology, religion, telepathy. Well, that was really nice that he gave me these books, but what really surprised me besides the gift was that he said that a great many of his colleagues at NASA had already read all those.
Well, that doesn't surprise me because...
But
during that
the point is that just from what I've just said so far, you would never guess that NASA was so deeply involved in all of this stuff back in 86 by what we're seeing in the news now. They truly are just spoon-feeding us just tidbits of information, and people shouldn't get excited about it because it's not much that they're showing us.
No, not at all. And I think I've told you this before. I think it was 1966, but my senior year in college, a UFO landed on the campus. And when the police came in with their sirens and everything, they turned on the stadium lights, and it lifted off, and it swooped over my dorm, and it felt like for a moment it hesitated there, kind of like take a good look. And then it went, and it was gone, and there was no noise, no sound, no air displacement. And what was fascinating is that some people were terrified, some people were screaming, some people were hiding, some people, I mean, you know, they were going wacko. Some people didn't see it. I saw it, and all I could think of was, oh, this is so cool. Does it have a VIN number? You know, because I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world. However, there was a total blackout of information about it. And the news, you know, didn't report it. Nobody reported it. It was like it never happened. And then J. Allen Hynek came out and said, swamp gas. And I had been teased for decades about how much beer did I have to drink, and, you know, and it's like, but I don't drink. So, you know, and there was such a clampdown on any information about any of this stuff, and people were persecuted, literally. I mean, even my, you know, my mother believed me, but my son did not. of course, that was later. But, So there has been such a reluctance to let any of this information out, and during that time frame with the shuttle and everything, that's according to conspiracy theorists, and I have to, you know, I'm not an expert on all of this either, but I've read a lot. The secret space program has been out there for decades.
Everything that I've read and heard and seen, I agree with that.
Yeah. So they're letting NASA go through all of the stupidity of playing around with. I mean, our government has had UFOs that they have been able to reverse engineer. So our rockets that are going up in the sky and stuff like that, I mean, that's just for the general public, because there's no way they're going to, you know, in those rockets are going to make it anywhere, maybe around the moon. But, you know, So they are keeping the general public. So I know at first in 1947 they did a research and they said, you know, the general public can't handle it. Look at War of the Worlds and the panic that ensued. But today everybody knows this other stuff, and the government is you're right, spoon feeding, and we're all sitting back saying, oh, come on. We even have a space force now. I mean, it's not the secret space force, but eventually they will open up and admit that there is another space force out there. But it blows my mind that we are kept in such darkness, and it isn't just
back in that time period. Terrible things were being done to people who did speak out and say that they were seeing something. One of the common things was to make them sound like they were crazy. Some people, I think, actually got locked up at some point or another because, you know, this cover-up went to that extent where people were actually being hurt by the cover-up. And I can remember talking with people who had said too much about what they saw, and they were just belittled and made fun of, you know, probably worse than what you're saying, because I don't think you went as public as some of these other people did. But it's cruel. It's cruel to try to make people think they're crazy.
Well, yeah. Well, when I interviewed for my first job, somebody, the man who was interviewing me said, oh, you went to Eastern Michigan. I said, I did. He said, did you see the UFO?
Cool.
And I said, I did, and he said, don't talk about it. So,
well.
So it was, you know, like, that's the 60s. Now, you know, Roswell was in the 40s, and you come up to the present moment. And during World War II, they were seeing the UFOs. They were calling them Foo Fighters. I mean, they've been out there, and the general public is not stupid. So I don't know what the government what point the government is taking here, because I do believe if we knew how much money they were throwing into covert operations and the other technologies that, that they now have, I think there would be an uprising. I really do, because I do believe the government is holding back so much information, not only about UFOs, but about cancer research and all sorts of other things that they, because Big Pharma is in there controlling things, that that if it ever became common knowledge what they are holding back, I think there would be an uprising in this country. I really think so.
Well, we've got enough uprising going on in the country right now. I sincerely hope that doesn't happen. We don't need another uprising. I mean, civil craziness is pretty out of control in so many situations. But let me jump just a little bit more and bring us up more recently. And again, I told you I was going to speak at least to some degree from a first-person perspective.
Uh-huh.
And more recently, I have, in the last few years, used Google Earth/Mars, and I have found contemporary structures, biospheres, huge entrances into the planet's interior, and landed spacecraft on Mars using Google Earth. And it's just fascinating. And some of these entrances, they're really huge. One of them is like 3,700 feet high and 528 feet wide. That's huge. That is absolutely a monster. And at first I thought that I was finding maybe the same entrance, because they're structured the same. They look like the, what do you call it, the post and lintel structure for a basic door.
Uh-huh.
But then when I, began to look at them more closely, they're different sizes, they're different widths, they're different heights. And so even though the entrance structure is so similar from one to the other, they vary in size. So, and not only that, some of the stuff that I found initially, I would go back and I could see where they were doing airbrushing to, make them look less obvious. And this happens a lot. It's happened to me a number of times when I've found something using Google Earth, and I give people the coordinates, and sometimes within just a day or so, it's blurred out, or you know, something's been done to it, so that you can't really clearly see what's in the first one. So if anybody starts using Google Earth to play detective, and it can be very interesting, make a screenshot, you know, save it, because you may not see it exactly that way again. And that's been done a number of times, you know, with Mars.
Well, you've on your website, Skyships Over Cashiers, you have many articles with these pictures of these structures, and you know, you've been using Google Earth for quite a while now, and you've spotted underwater airports, you've spotted underwater structures all over the place. I mean, it's the Google Earth is great.
As long as you realize that it may disappear if you've discovered something they really don't want you to see. I'll give you another example. Back in 2011, I guess this does go back quite a ways. Back in 2011, I found something that looks like a biosphere, and I found it in the northern hemisphere of Mars. 5 years later, I found a similar structure looking like a biosphere near the South Pole. And these are not small. The smallest one, the one in the northern hemisphere, is over 652 feet long or in length.
Wow.
But the one I found in 2016 is over 7,000 feet in length. And
oh, my goodness.
There is a man who is well-known as a designer of a concept artist for space biospheres, for all sorts of things. He's had his work in National Geographic and New Science and Mars Exploration Magazine. He's done work for Deep Space Industries, Inner Orbital Systems, the Mars Foundation. And on one of the articles, I have a picture of one of his designs right next to what I found on Mars. Now, the one on Mars is more blurred, but you can still see the similarity in structure. And if people are interested in this, I know I've got Mars things probably spread around the website, but the three things I've just mentioned are all in the 2016 archives of Global Links. So people can just scroll through and slow down when you see a picture that looks like it might be Mars.
Well, your stuff is profound, and from books that I've read lately that are talking about those things that we haven't been told, they're talking about bases on the dark side of the moon. They're talking about bases on Mars already, and I don't understand why the government would keep us in such darkness. I mean,
okay. Obviously.
Put a
pin in that, because we'll go back to the moon. Let me give you one more thing on Mars, and then we'll go to the moon. How does that sound? All right.
Okay.
Another, and I don't know when I posted this one. Let's see. I guess I originally posted it in 2015 in that same section, Global Links. And it is a giant spaceship that's landed on Mars. And we're talking about something that's really big, because with Google Earth, there's a way of measuring things. And this thing is 3.58 miles in diameter. That is no small craft. And you can actually see the shadow on one side where, you know, it clearly is above the surface. And again, I've got the coordinates there, so if people are lucky, maybe it's still there and you can find it for yourself. And if people go and find these things, copy and paste the coordinates that I am able to give, at least in some of the stories, because if you don't get the little degree marks and stuff exactly right, it won't be accepted with Google Earth. So just copy it, paste it into the Google Earth search bar Mars, and you know, you might be able to find it for yourself if they haven't gotten to it since I was there.
Well, it's really, to me, so amazing that you know, we have that. I mean, didn't they used to have NASA pictures up there that they're no longer putting up to?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. And another thing that kind of supports all of this is back in the, let's see, when was it? I think it was at the end of 2020. It wasn't very long ago. And professor, and I'm going to mess up his name, Ashed, perhaps. His last name is Eshed. And he served as the head of Israel's Security Space Program for quite a long time, from 1981 to 2010. And he's been awarded for his works. I mean, he's a very credible man. And he went public, and the title I gave the article on our website was Space Security Expert Reveals Alliance with Space Aliens. I am not going to read his statement on the air, but I will single out just a couple sentences. He said there's an agreement between the U.S. government and the aliens. They signed a contract with us to do experiments here on Mars. They, too, are researching and trying to understand the whole fabric of the universe, and they want us as helpers. So that's one direct, I mean, he clearly states that the U.S. government is working with aliens on Mars. The other statement that jumped out at me was, he quote, there's an underground base in the depths of Mars where their representatives, referring to the aliens, are located, and also are American astronauts.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see why when they first started coming out with this stuff, a couple weeks ago, I just got totally annoyed, because I thought, this is just so minuscule compared to what's really going on.
Well, not only that, but look at the Antarctic. I mean, Operation High Jump was not an exercise. It was an exercise of futility, but they were sent to the Antarctic to destroy a base that was there theoretically, and they got attacked by saucers, and the ship got sunk, destroyed.
Whatever word it is, right? I got you.
Sink, sank, sunk.
You and I both do better when we write. When we write, we'll probably not mutilate the English. But sometimes when you just talk off the top of your head, we just don't get it right.
That's true. So there is clearly an underground base of some sort in the Antarctic. Everybody knows about it, but nobody talks about it.
Mainstream doesn't talk about it. There are certainly enough people, and alternate sources that are dealing with it. And that's one of the places where I first began to really get censored. Again, using Google Earth, my detective play toy, I found two giant entrances into the interior of Antarctica. And one of them actually looks like it has a metal awning over the entrance. It's kind of, circular shape, but it still looks like an awning. And to give you a perspective, the one that has the bowl-shaped awning over it, let's see here. Oh, it's the other one. The larger one is 295 feet at its widest point and 98 feet in height. And to give a perspective on this, the wingspan of a Boeing 747 is only 196 feet. So that means a Boeing 747 could fly into this entranceway and have essentially 50 feet on each side of its wingtips. Now, once I did that, they essentially spilled India ink all over the image, and you couldn't see it anymore.
Wow.
But I had the original image, and I don't know what to tell you, but that was one of the times when I was really disappointed that they were able to do that. So Google Earth is a wonderful tool. We discover many things that way, but clearly they're in cahoots with the government as far as covering up things the government doesn't want the general public to know.
But, you know, because of the Internet, because of Google Earth, because communication is now so easy with putting information out there in many different ways, shapes, forms, it doesn't make sense to me to censor, to hold back. I think the one thing that because they've reverse engineered so much, I mean, we have the capacity to do, you know, to do space travel that goes beyond the humongous, clunky things we're sending into space and the space station up there now. Why? Why would they keep it from us? I mean, part of it has to be because, you know, Big Pharma and the energy people, you know, don't want us to understand how much technology we actually have, because it would take away the money that they're scoffing off all of us continuously. But it to me is mankind here has the capacity to do so much more and is doing it, but in secret. So why not let the general public know what's going on? Maybe we'd have greater compassion for the quote-unquote government, but I get a feeling sometimes that the government, in other words, the president and the Senate and the Congress, they don't even know what's going on. So who is it that's doing all the controlling?
Well, clearly the Congress in Washington certainly is not in control of everything. They can't even deal with everyday stuff that's going on in the country right now. So they're certainly not ones to be dependent on. In actuality, I can understand why initially they tried to protect the public from aliens and UFOs. Because like Roswell happened in 1947, that was shortly after World War II. Eisenhower, I believe, when he was president, he, and this has been written about in many different ways, but he was approached by one race of aliens that said that they would help us if we would simply not use nuclear weapons. Because of the paranoia of World War II, and Eisenhower was a super duper general, he was afraid to give that up just because we had gone through this terrible war. So he made a deal with a different group of aliens, and it was kind of a tit for tat thing. You let us do this, and you know, you can have this. So I think we got in a bind with at that point. But you can understand at one level why he didn't want to give up the weapons, because he was a general who was supposed to protect the country. But that's how we got in a whole lot of trouble.
But Mary, you know, this has always bothered me, and maybe you can clarify it for me. If there is another species or alien species that comes to the Earth, why would they make a contract with us? They're obviously superior. They obviously have technology well beyond ours. So why don't they just take what they want? I mean, it's kind of like us making contracts with the Indians and then breaking them. My theory would be that if we made a contract with a superior species that, you know, had space travel and all of that, you know, they could easily take what they want. They didn't have to make sign a contract with them. That doesn't make sense to me.
I don't know if I have a real good answer for that one. But there was some agreement that was made, and that has come from a number of different people who have been, you know, close to that administration. His granddaughter, who, I haven't seen a video or anything on her in a number of years, but she's been very vocal about what's going on in Mars.
Yeah, Laura.
She comes off at the time I saw her. She came across a little bit like a leftover hippie from the 1960s, but you know, I do not know, you know, what she's like now. But some truth.
If you're interested, on Saturday night she's going to be on Nightlight.
No kidding. Good for you. I hope you have a lot of good questions for her.
Oh, I do. I do. She's a great granddaughter.
Oh, it's great granddaughter. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Can't trust me.
And yes.
Drop the granddaughter.
Yeah, Laura Eisenhower. Yeah, Laura.
Uh-huh.
And she supposedly was actually asked to take part in the 20 and back secret space program, where they serve for 20 years and then they return you to the time that you signed up and wipe your memory, and you go back to your life and you don't even remember that you served in the space program. So.
And she refused to do that.
Yeah, she turned him down. So, she's into a lot of stuff. So, yes, it's going to be interesting on Saturday. She's very enthusiastic. I have a feeling she's a wind up and just sit back and make cookies while she talks. So, but we'll see. Maybe I'll get a word in edgewise.
That should be a very interesting program. I would encourage everybody who's listening to tune in and hear that show.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. So see, the thing is, I understand them wanting to, you know, the reverse engineering. We had down saucers, so we have the materials. I mean, and theoretically, Velcro was something we got from one of the reverse engineering things. But I know that there is some sort of authority controlling not only the knowledge of, you know, our connection to extraterrestrials, but also what is made available to the general public and what is not. And that takes me back to almost was it a Twilight Zone? Rod Sterling did, where the alien lands on the White House lawn and, you know, he comes in peace and he's going to help people heal and he's going to give things to humanity. And then he says, you know, he has a book in his hands and the title is To Serve Man. And, you know, he's here to give us help and give us this and that. And then he finally says, you know, anybody who would like to visit his home planet, they're free to come. They're going to have to put on weight because the space travel is, you know, hard on the system. And at the very end, somebody translates the rest of the book, and it turns out To Serve Man is a cookbook.
Rod Sterling came out with some really thought-provoking episodes.
He did.
I didn't watch it all the time, but I do remember one where I think it was a couple. But this is going way back. But they were they wanted them to feel at home on their planet, so they set up a thing that looked like Earth and the house and all this kind of stuff. And I don't hold me to this. It was like suddenly the curtains pulled back, and they are in a zoo cage, and the people on the other planet are observing them.
Yep. I saw that one, too.
Well, I probably didn't tell it right, because, I mean, I'm really digging back into the archives, because I've never seen it again since it originally came out, which is forever ago.
No, you're absolutely right on. That's exactly what it was. So it's sort of like, okay, if we really are in contact with these other species and whatever, it seems to me that the conspiracy theories are probably a lot worse than the reality of what's going on. And so, you know, just being honest and saying, okay, we are working. Wernher von Braun talked about getting help from aliens. I mean, he was very, you know, open about the fact that their space program, they had alien aliens helping them with a lot of their materials. And when Project Paperclip came over here, all of the Nazis were, you know, given new names and new identities and put to work in our space program.
And there's, I mean, that you're right. And at NASA, I'm not going to be able to remember the name of this book, but it was Bill Tompkin or Tompkins. And he worked at the highest levels at NASA. He worked directly with von Braun and the second man in control, whose name I do not remember. And his book reveals that they had ETs that looked like us. That were providing the information. And we made such quick progress in our space program early on because we essentially were being fed the information by these ETs. But there were good ones and the bad ones. He describes that there were also those who could pass for a short time as humans, but then, you know, he'd seen them transform into reptilians. So there were the good and bad ones within that program also. So, ETs have been involved with us for quite some time.
And, you know, according to some, you know, they've been here forever. They've been here as long as we've been here. So in a way...
Well, if you look at some of the Egyptian art, you know, with the elongated heads and those, you know, the helmet-like hats that they wore, would cover up the long head, but there's a lot of art around the world showing, like, the royalty of Egypt looking that way.
Absolutely. I think it was Akhenaten, I think.
Mm-hmm. He didn't have a normal shaped body, and he had that elongated head or skull.
And their children were the
talk
same?
About, I'm sorry?
And their children were deformed as well, so.
Mm-hmm. So, they've been around for a long time. So when they get all excited about this little radar screen with a little blip going through it, you just want to scream because, you know, this just baby stuff. And I mentioned earlier we should put a pin on the subject of the moon. There's been... Well, I remember, again, years ago, we did a story on a woman who worked at NASA, and her job was to airbrush out some of the structures they were finding on the backside of the moon. And if you look at some of the photos, you can, and if you have a good eye, you can actually tell that something has been manipulated or airbrushed or changed in some way. Another thing is, we have to ask the question, why are we so focused on getting to Mars, and we seem to have just gone to the moon and decided never to go back again? And I have no way of knowing this, but my guess is that the ETs that are based on the other side of the moon don't want us up there.
Well, I read someplace that the ETs, I forget which mission when they landed, they were in a crater, and all around the rim of the crater were spaceships, and they were told, don't come back.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't.
Right.
Like I said, I tried to do
my homework before we had the show tonight, and we've had our website since 2008. And uh-huh. I can remember stuff, and then it's like, all right, which section did I put that in, and what year was it in? I can't always immediately find what I'm looking for. One of the stories that I did was a man, you know, very much on, you know, an insider on all the space stuff. He said, going back to World War II, that uh-huh. the, and this is what I wanted to find, I don't remember the title, it was like there were Navy, like secret agents, that's not the term, but they revealed that back then, the ETs from, I think, Antarctica were flying to the moon and back.
Uh-huh.
And that's World War II.
Yeah, and so, I mean, how much fun would a history class be if all this information were
there? Oh, if it was real history, man, the kids would just be absolutely glued to the teacher to hear these kind of stories.
And you know, what really gets me is, I mean, there's so much, I mean, Christopher Columbus saw an unidentified flying object come out of the ocean, and it's in his journal.
Wait. Can you stand to be corrected on that one?
Sure.
Okay. One year I went to San Salvador, which is the island in the Bahamas where they believe Christopher Columbus first landed. I went there I was working for a newspaper, so I was going for a story, too. And I was there for the Columbus Day celebration on this little island. It's an out island, so we're not talking big activities. And while I was there, which was the same time of the year as Christopher Columbus landed, supposedly, on this island, I was in one of the areas where the natives were, they would have these bonfires, and they would throw wood on them, and when they did, these sparks would go up, and that is what Columbus was seeing from his ship. And the same thing when I was there happened when Columbus was there, because to keep the mosquitoes away, they would keep these fires going, because that time of year the mosquitoes were bad. And so he may have seen UFOs, but he saw those close to shore. And I suspect it was the same fires I was seeing.
Could be. I forget where in his journal, if he was, you know, out of sight of land, or I'm going to have to go find the journal thing, because if he was out at sea when he saw it, it would be an unidentified.
Again, you and I are digging around in my memory bank, which is always should be refreshed before going off talking about it. But what I do think I remember, because I was reading his journal, was that they kind of, I don't know, like coasted right offshore waiting for daytime to land, and they wanted to land on the far side of the island, or I believe the west side of the island, where it would be more protected. So they were like just coasting back and forth waiting for daylight. So they were close. It's not like they were out at sea.
I'm sure you probably did. I know that on my website I've got archives of sightings of UFOs that go back to the beginning of time, just about. And I did not compile it. Patrick did. And because it wasn't in any of his books, it ended up on my website to make sure the information was there. But there's a list of sightings of UFOs that go back literally to almost, you know, caveman time. And it comes all the way up to kind of current, not current, obviously, because he passed away 10 years ago, but it does cover a lot of this, and it covers a lot of the military people that have been exposed to UFO encounters. And I don't know if you ever looked at it, Mary?
Looked at we had what?
On my website, the UFO section?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
guess I better,
that might be of interest.
Okay, all righty. I will get to it.
I do not take credit for all of the work that went into it. Patrick Cook did it. But because it wasn't any place else, I just put it on my website, along with the giant material. That is from Patrick's website as well. But his website had to come down, and I wanted...
That's another thing they're hiding from us, and I don't know why. And a number of books have come out in recent years about all the giant skeletons that have disappeared when they've been turned over to the Smithsonian. And
oh, yeah.
You already have mentioned that I did one book on the Cherokee Little People Were Real, and it's based primarily on all the little tunnels and skeletons that were found at Western Carolina University, which is close to where I live. I don't even know where I wanted to go with that, but anyhow, I don't know. It's just amazing. But they had those little skeletons, and they had also two giant skeletons. I got this from people who had graduated from the anthropology department. They had two giant skeletons with six toes, and those and the little skeleton of the little person with the wisdom teeth got shipped off to the Smithsonian just a few years ago. So I don't know if we'll ever see that again either. Why would they want to hide the reality of giants? Why?
I don't know, but on my website, there's a huge section on giant sightings and reports and things like that. You can spend days in it, but one of the cool things about the giants is, you know, the similarities between the red hair, the fair skin, double rows of teeth, and extra digits on fingers and toes. And somebody that was a co-host on my show for a very long time swears that she was a descendant because she had auburn hair, fair skin. Everybody in her family was born with double rows of teeth and extra digits and toes. No,
wow.
I'm serious. And, you know, she said it's common knowledge that, you know, anybody born in our family, chances are they're going to have, you know, the teeth and the extra digits. And, I mean, Deb was an amazing person. And she said, you know, her whole family, as far as she knew, could even trace it back, had the genetic anomaly of double rows of teeth.
Do you have her story on your website or someplace else?
No, and she's passed away. But I should have interviewed her when I had the chance. You know.
Oh well,
we don't.
That would have been a good one.
It would have been a very good
one. Especially if you could have gotten photos to go along with it, that would have been a humdinger of a report.
Well, it would have because you know they had the scars. You could see where the fingers were taken off and the toes were taken off. So that you know the shoes would fit, and you know, and of course gloves. You know, I mean, but I think that's one of the reasons I have those two sections on the website because tremendous amount of research went into just documenting all of the sightings and all of the reports, and you were mentioning the little people here in Tennessee. They discovered huge graveyards of little people. Thousands and thousands of them. And you know, I looked up the last time we were talking about the little people, and I discovered, you know, that the graveyards were here and stuff. And the man who documented it back in the 1800s, there was a museum that was founded here in Tennessee, and then when the museum was closed, all of the material was sent over to another museum here in Tennessee, and the stuff, the proof, the bones, whatever, are in storage someplace. They're not on display anymore. So it's a matter of people don't want to know the cool stuff like that. I know at Thanksgiving dinner, I told my son and daughter-in-law have a thing, and you know, you have to bring an interesting topic to the table for conversation. And I was all set with this, and everybody looked at me like I was crazy. And I looked at them and I said, "No, this is true. Google it, for Pete's sake."
Well,
they've all lived here in Tennessee, and they didn't know about it. So I think that you know, this country has so much fascinating stuff going on in it that the general public just doesn't even care about. It boggles my mind. I mean, there is so much amazing material and amazing history that isn't taught in school, that people should take the time to gather, because this is an amazing country, and it has an antiquity.
Where was the woman from that had the genetic things from giants?
Where did she live? She lived in Oklahoma.
Well, I wish you could figure out a way to dig that story up.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say dig her up, and I was going to say, oh, I
don't, oh, no, no,
feel
no,
your family
I'm not,
wouldn't
I'm not
like
into
that.
No. So I know this is a little bit off topic, and we're just about at the end of your show, but
I started doing
a little bit of research on this story that's been breaking, you know, in a big way in the last week or so, about the Havana syndrome, where, you know, CIA people and other diplomats in Cuba were getting zapped. It was doing, you know, bad things to their brains. And recently, there have been people outside that are staffers for the president who are outside the White House, and they got zapped. And so I just started doing preliminary research, and I found out about the aluminum foil, which we've made jokes about forever, that, you know, you can protect yourself and the aliens by wearing a tinfoil hat.
Yeah.
Well, after reading this, I went and took my cell phone and wrapped it up in aluminum foil today. Then I called my cell phone from my land phone. Would you believe it didn't work?
Oh, wow.
And then if your listeners like to, you know, play around the experiment, try that one out, because it really didn't work. And that was this afternoon, and I had my sister do it, and same thing happened. So it's kind of a fun little thing to do.
It is. And I think that it's important, you know, Christmas Day there was a van that was blown up in Nashville outside the AT&T building that had a lot of the voting machines in it, too, and there was an amazing EMP surge, and it burned up the power source in my computer, and so there is a lot of this electronic stuff going on. So if people are experiencing headaches and stuff like that, try wearing tin foil on your head and see if it helps. It can't hurt. Can't hurt at all.
Yeah, like I said, I was actually amazed that I thought maybe it'd be a faint ring or something, but no, it just wouldn't ring at all. So
wow.
There's something to the aluminum foil.
Yeah, Mark has a picture of himself with a aluminum foil hat up on one of his Facebook pages or something, and he, you know, I think I'll stop teasing him about it. He probably was smarter than the rest of us.
He might have been. Anyhow, I felt we ought to tell the president, and he ought to start wearing something on his head.
Yeah, maybe too late, but we'll see. So much for political whatever. But I want to thank you again. This has been such a cool hour, and I look forward to every time that you come on and talk about this wonderful stuff.
And it's always a joy to talk to you, too. Thank you so much.
Well, we will have to do this again next month, and I'm sure we'll find another great topic to talk about, too. But check out Mary's website. It's Skyships Over Cashiers. It's a fabulous website. You'll get lost in it. You know, take a sandwich and a blanket and cookies and, you know, just get lost in it, because the archives go back for decades, and they're all fascinating. Again, Mary, thank you so much. I so appreciate you taking the time to do the show with me.
Okay. I hope you have a nice evening. Sleep well.
You too. And everybody, thank you so much for listening. Look forward to tomorrow. Tomorrow, Solaris and I are going to be going into the to spirituality. So check out that show. On Saturday, I have Laura Eisenhower on. And then next week, we're back to a regular Monday, Tuesday show. And look forward to seeing you there. Check out the YouTube channel. If you like what you see, please subscribe. That's how we know you're listening. Good night now.